Chapter 50. Damon and Pythias were undoubtedly very good fellows in their way. The former for his extreme readiness to put in special bail for a friend, and the latter for a certain Trump-like punctuality in turning up just in the very nick of time, scarcely less remarkable. Many points in their character have, however, grown obsolete. Damons are rather hard to find in these days of imprisonment for debt, except the sham ones, and they cost half a crown. And as to the Pythiases, the few that have existed in these degenerate times have had an unfortunate knack of making themselves scarce at the very moment when their appearance would have been strictly classical. If the actions of these heroes, however, can find no parallel in modern times, their friendship can. We have Damon and Pythias on the one hand. We have Poeter and Smithers on the other. And, lest the two last-mentioned names should never have reached the ears of our unenlightened readers, we can do no better than make them acquainted with the owners thereof. Mr. Thomas Poeter, then, was a clerk in the city, and Mr. Robert Smithers was a ditto in the same. Their incomes were limited, but their friendship was unbounded. They lived in the same street, walked into town every morning at the same hour, dined at the same slap-bang every day, and reveled in each other's company very night. They were knit together by the closest ties of intimacy and friendship, or, as Mr. Thomas Poeter touchingly observed, they were thick and thin pals, and nothing but it. Apostrophe, there was a spice of romance in Mr. Smithers' disposition, a ray of poetry, a gleam of misery, a sort of consciousness of he didn't exactly know what, coming across him, he didn't precisely know why, which stood out in fine relief against the offhand, dashing, amateur pickpocket sort of manner which distinguished Mr. Poeter in an eminent degree. The peculiarity of their respective dispositions extended itself to their individual costume. Mr. Smithers generally appeared in public in a surtout and shoes, with a narrow black neckerchief and a brown hat, very much turned up at the sides, peculiarities which Mr. Poeter wholly eschewed, for it was his ambition to do something in the celebrated Kittier stagecoach way, and he had even gone so far as to invest capital in the purchase of a rough blue coat with wooden buttons, made upon the fireman's principle, in which, with the addition of a low-crowned, flower-pot saucer-shaped hat, he had created no inconsiderable sensation at the Albion in Little Russell Street, and divers other places of public and fashionable resort. Mr. Poeter and Mr. Smithers had mutually agreed that, on the receipt of their quarter's salary, they would jointly, and in company, spend the evening, an evident misnomer the spending applying, as everybody knows, not to the evening itself, but to all the money the individual may chance to be possessed of, on the occasion to which reference is made. And they had likewise agreed that, on the evening aforesaid, they would make a night of it an expressive term, implying the borrowing of several hours from tomorrow morning, adding them to the night before, and manufacturing a compound night of the whole. The quarter day arrived at last, we say at last, because quarter days are as eccentric as comets, moving wonderfully quick when you have a good deal to pay, and marvelously slow when you have a little to receive. Mr. Thomas Poeter and Mr. Robert Smithers met by appointment to begin the evening with a dinner, and a nice snug comfortable dinner they had, consisting of a little procession of four chops and four kidneys, following each other, supported on either side by a pot of the real draft stout, and attended by divers cushions of bread and wedges of cheese. When the cloth was removed, Mr. Thomas Poeter ordered the waiter to bring in two goes of his best Scotch whiskey, with warm water and sugar, and a couple of his very mildest Havanas, which the waiter did. Mr. Thomas Poeter mixed his grog, and lighted his cigar. Mr. Robert Smithers did the same. And then, Mr. Thomas Poeter jocularly proposed as the first toast, the abolition of all offices whatever, not sinecures, but counting houses, which was immediately drunk by Mr. Robert Smithers, with enthusiastic applause. So they went on, talking politics, puffing cigars, and sipping whiskey and water, until the goes most appropriately so called were both gone, which Mr. Robert Smithers perceiving, immediately ordered in two more goes of the best Scotch whiskey, and two more of the very mildest Havanas. And the goes kept coming in, and the mild Havanas kept going out, until, what with the drinking, and lighting, and puffing, and the stale ashes on the table, and the tallow grease on the cigars, Mr. Robert Smithers began to doubt the mildness of the Havanas, and to feel very much, as if he had been sitting in a hackney coach with his back to the horses. As to Mr. Thomas Potter, he would keep laughing out loud, and volunteering inarticulate declarations, that he was all right, apostrophe in proof of which, he feebly bespoke the evening paper after the next gentleman, but finding it a matter of some difficulty, to discover any news in its columns, or to ascertain distinctly, whether it had any columns at all, walked slowly out to look for the moon, and, after coming back quite pale with looking up at the sky so long, and attempting to express mirth at Mr. Robert Smithers having fallen asleep, by various galvanic chuckles, laid his head on his arm, and went to sleep also. When he awoke again, Mr. Robert Smithers awoke too, and they both very gravely agreed that it was extremely unwise to eat so many pickled walnuts with the chops, as it was a notorious fact that they always made people queer and sleepy. Indeed, if it had not been for the whiskey and cigars, there was no knowing what harm they mightn't have done them. So they took some coffee, and after paying the bill, 12, and 2 pence the dinner, and the odd 10 pence for the waiter 13 shillings in all, started out on their expedition to manufacture a knight. It was just 8:30, so they thought they couldn't do better than go at half price to the slips at the City Theatre, which they did accordingly. Mr. Robert Smithers, who had become extremely poetical after the settlement of the bill, enlivening the walk by informing Mr. Thomas Potter in confidence that he felt an inward presentiment of approaching dissolution, and subsequently embellishing the theater by falling asleep with his head and both arms gracefully drooping over the front of the boxes. Such was the quiet demeanor of the unassuming Smithers, and such were the happy effects of Scotch whiskey and Havanas on that interesting person. But Mr. Thomas Potter, whose great aim it was to be considered as a knowing card, apostrophe a fast goer, and so forth, conducted himself in a very different manner, and commenced going very fast, indeed rather too fast at last, for the patience of the audience, to keep pace with him. On his first entry, he contented himself by earnestly calling upon the gentleman in the gallery to flare up, apostrophe accompanying the demand with another request, expressive of his wish that they would instantaneously form a union, apostrophe both which requisitions were responded to, in the manner most in vogue on such occasions. Give that dog a bone! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried one gentleman in his shirt sleeves. Where have you been a-having half a pint of intermediate beer? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried a second. Tailor! Apostrophe, screamed a third. Barber's clerk! Shouted a fourth. Throw him over! Apostrophe, roared a fifth, while numerous voices concurred in desiring Mr. Thomas Potter to go home to his mother. Apostrophe, apostrophe, all these taunts Mr. Thomas Potter received with supreme contempt, cocking the low-crowned hat a little more on one side, whenever any reference was made to his personal appearance, and, standing up with his arms akimbo, expressing defiance melodramatically. The overture to which these various sounds had been an ad libitum accompaniment concluded, the second piece began, and Mr. Thomas Potter, emboldened by impunity, proceeded to behave in a most unprecedented and outrageous manner. First of all, he imitated the shake of the principal female singer, then, groaned at the blue fire, then, affected to be frightened into convulsions of terror at the appearance of the ghost, and, lastly, not only made a running commentary, in an audible voice, upon the dialogue on the stage, but actually awoke Mr. Robert Smithers, who who, hearing his companion making a noise, and having a very indistinct notion where he was, or what was required of him, immediately, by way of imitating a good example, set up the most unearthly, unremitting, and appalling howling that ever audience heard. It was too much. Turn them out. Apostrophe apostrophe was the general cry. A noise, as of shuffling of feet, and men being knocked up with violence against wainscoting, was heard. A hurried dialogue of come out? Apostrophe apostrophe I won't. Apostrophe you shall. I shan't. Apostrophe apostrophe give me your card, sir. Apostrophe you're a scoundrel, sir. And so forth, succeeded. A round of applause beckoned the approbation of the audience, and Mr. Robert Smithers and Mr. Thomas Potter found themselves shot with astonishing swiftness into the road, without having had the trouble of once putting foot to ground during the whole progress of their rapid descent. Mr. Robert Smithers, being constitutionally one of the slow goers, and having had quite enough of fast going, in the course of his recent expulsion, to last until the quarter day then next ensuing at the very least, had no sooner emerged with his companion from the precincts of Milton Street, than he proceeded to indulge in circuitous references to the beauties of sleep, mingled with distant allusions to the propriety of returning to Islington, and testing the influence of their patent dramas over the street door locks to which they respectively belonged. Mr. Thomas Potter, however, was valorous and peremptory. They had come out to make a night of it. And a night must be made. So Mr. Robert Smithers, who was three parts dull, and the other dismal, despairingly assented. And they went into a wine vault, to get materials for assisting them in making a night, where they found a good many young ladies, and various old gentlemen, and a plentiful sprinkling of hackney coachmen and cab drivers, all drinking and talking together, and Mr. Thomas Potter and Mr. Robert Smithers drank small glasses of brandy, and large glasses of soda, until they began to have a very confused idea, either of things in general, or of anything in particular, and, when they had done treating themselves they began to treat everybody else, and the rest of the entertainment was a confused mixture of heads and heels, black eyes and blue uniforms, mud and gas lights, thick doors, and stone paving. Then, as standard novelists expressively inform us, all was a blank. Apostrophe apostrophe and in the morning the blank was filled up with the word station house, apostrophe and the station house was filled up with Mr. Thomas Potter, Mr. Robert Smithers, and the major part of their wine vault companions of the preceding night, with a comparatively small portion of clothing of any kind. And it was disclosed at the police office, to the indignation of the bench, and the astonishment of the spectators, how one Robert Smithers, aided and abetted by one Thomas Potter, had knocked down and beaten, in divers streets, at different times, five men, four boys, and three women, how the said Thomas Potter had feloniously obtained possession of five door knockers, two bell handles, and a bonnet, how Robert Smithers, his friend, had sworn, at least £40 worth of oaths, at the rate of 5 shillings apiece, terrified whole streets full of Her Majesty's subjects with awful shrieks and alarms of fire, destroyed the uniforms of 5 policemen, and committed various other atrocities, too numerous to recapitulate. And the magistrate, after an appropriate reprimand, fined Mr. Thomas Potter and Mr. Thomas Smithers 5 shillings each, for being, what the law vulgarly terms, drunk, and £34 for 17 assaults at 40 shillings a head, with liberty to speak to the prosecutors. The prosecutors were spoken to, and Messrs. Potter and Smithers lived on credit, for a quarter, as best they might, and, although the prosecutors expressed their readiness to be assaulted twice a week, on the same terms, they have never since been detected in making a night of it. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.